Hi everybody, this is Carmel McPherson, President of Highlander Worldwide. Please join us for the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention, The Gathering, in Los Angeles, California, October 20th to the 22nd. You're listening to Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 36 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover all things Highlander, including the movies, the TV series, guest interviews, novels, audiobooks, games, special events, and even fielding a few questions from the Blood of Kings Facebook fan community and a whole lot more. I'm Norm, one of your Blood of Kings hosts. I do believe that Kevin right now is running for his life with the stolen Death Star plans in his hands and trying to make sure that he is the last Rebel Fleet Trooper standing at Orlando Star Wars Celebration before he makes it back home. We miss you, Kevin. Travel safe. We will see you back next week. But until then, I have my brother from another mother, my teacher in all things Highlander, the immortal Chimoli himself, Mr. Mike Sellers. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Norm. Can't wait to get in here and knock out some of these questions.
Well, we have, this is our second show together, which is kind of awesome, because the last time we did a back-to-back together like this, we were discussing the card game, much like we did with the previous episode, episode 35, when we're talking about the Highlander collectible card game deck building episode, Deck Building 101, with our good friend and fellow Highlander card game player extraordinaire, Stephen Rice. So maybe, I don't know, let's get a few more of these episodes in you and we can pretty much kick Kevin to the curb, right?
Sounds good. Yeah, because if he doesn't get back with his Death Star plans, it's all over.
It is. It's all over for the Rebellion and it's all over for Kevin here as co-host. So Mike's moving in, Kev. Oh, no, here's the reason why, Mike, I think you have the biggest grudge with Kevin, because I still think that he owes you $20, right?
He owes the immortal Chimoli $20.
That's right.
And that's not a man to mess with.
That's right. You don't mess with the immortal Chimoli. Well, as you teased earlier, Mike, we have a special show tonight, because one of the things that we love about our Blood of Kings community, our listeners, and especially the fans on our Facebook page, we love all the interaction that we get with all of them because they're so passionate. I love Highlander fans because I think in some ways you have to be really, really, really serious and honest about your passion as a Highlander fan, because we're not the biggest fandom in the world. I mean, we're not Star Wars. We're not Star Trek. We're not Harry Potter. You know, we're not these larger tentpole fandoms. I mean, and I've said this before on other shows, we're like the little fandom that continues to kind of just chug along, because fans that are Highlander fans are really, really vested, don't you think?
We're a very passionate crew. And that passion has kept us going for like 30 something years, so can't beat that.
And it's true passion. You know, it's something that, you know, you can't say, hey man, I'm a Highlander fan too. Oh yeah? You know, like, what's your favorite episode, and not be able to answer it. I think that everybody comes in from different directions, whether it's the movies or the TV show, the animation. I mean, some fans are really into the audiobooks, some fans are really into the music. So there are a lot of different ways that you can slice your Highlander pie. Slice. With a Highlander claymore.
Wouldn't that be a slash?
It would be a slash, or quite possibly a beheading. So before we get into the big, big, big topic and get into some of these questions, which are fantastic, by the way, I think that we have to go to that one very special place where everybody knows Joe's name. So, Mike, let's head on over to Joe's.
I like the way you think, Norm.
One of the things that, you know, I love about Joe's is that we can always come here and we can always order stuff. And for some odd reason, we've never been given a bill. I don't know why that is.
We're going to owe big time at the end of this.
Well, maybe we're not the dine and dash kind of people. You know, as a matter of fact, I think this is the reason why. I think we set up a tab under Kyle's name. So, Kyle, sorry, buddy. I know that you're still kind of stressing out and buried under all that paperwork because you are in the home stretch of tax season as we're recording this particular episode on April 17th. One more day until the end. And then hopefully you won't find all of those different accounting reports that we've that we've signed away from the Fandom Podcast Network, taking our tab at Joe's here under consideration. So maybe we should start dialing back a little bit on the free stuff.
They keep sending the tab to the Death Star with Kevin.
Kevin, it's your fault. I know that you set this up this way so that no one would ever be able to find our accounting. So I don't know. You might have to square that away with Kyle. But anyway, since we are kind of just sitting here and having our food and drink for free, anything special on the menu tonight, Mike?
A nice cold brew, a dark one, and my Jersey disco fries.
Dark cold brew. So what are we talking here? Anything in particular? Anything special that you like?
Dark. That was always pretty good. I don't need to get all fancy.
All right.
And unpronounceable like your drinks.
I feel you. I know, right? See, I'm going to have to start drinking some of the U.S. stuff because I'm running low. Well, Joe's running low. Not I'm running low. Joe's running a little low on some of my favorites. So anyway, as we are settling into our food and our beverage, as you should be settling into your food and your beverage, wherever you're listening to our podcast, a couple of different ways I'd like for you, all the listeners, to be able to get in touch with us and to find our podcast. So sometimes, and this is an interesting thing that one of the listeners asked me, Mike, sometimes they are looking for where they can find Blood of Kings and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm not sure if a lot of the fans realize that we're kind of within the umbrella of the Fandom Podcast Network. So if you'd like to find us, Blood of Kings, you can find us on the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for Android users. You could also contact us through social media on the Fandom Podcast Network and at Blood of Kings Pod. You can find us here on Facebook, of course, on Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group. And you can find us on Blood of Kings, a Highlander CCG, the collectible card game page. And that's a topic that we talked well at length about in the last episode on episode 35. If you'd like to contact us through email, you can contact us through bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. You can also contact us through Twitter at bloodofkingspod. And we have a really special contest that I'm going to talk about a little later through Twitter. You can always find Kevin on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Starfighter1701. And to the $20 man in the corner over there, Mike Sellers, you can find him on Twitter at what's your handle now, Mike? And Kevin, this is for you.
At Immortal Chamoli. So
that's IMMORTALCIM, 1MOLI?
1M.
1M, Chamoli.
So you can send PayPal payments to that address too, Kevin.
Yeah, and when you send it like friend money. Don't send it with money that's going to get taken out of the $20 because that's kind of cheap. These are not goods or services. These are friend monies, damn it. Darn it. Don't edit that out. I think I'm safe there, right?
If you say so.
Also, on iTunes, there is a way that you can help us on Blood of Kings and the Fandom Podcast Network get a little bit more visibility as you're searching through your podcasts. So on iTunes, on the Fandom Podcast Network, because that's where you'll find the way that you can leave your review, please leave us a review. You can tag us directly. You can say like, hey, I loved Blood of Kings, or hey, I loved this show, or hey, love that show on the Fandom Podcast Network. We love to receive your most honest review. But honestly, if your most honest review is 5-star, we would love to receive that too. So please leave us a review there. And who knows, if we have a really nice review that we can read, we'll read that here on the air on Blood of Kings on a future show. So now that's all out of the way. Whew, that worked up an appetite. I think let's discuss what's happening, Mike, in the world of Highlander. So we have a lot to discuss here at Joe's. And let's start with the Highlander Worldwide 25th anniversary gathering convention. Actually, there's not a lot going on right now in this update because I think a lot of things right now are in motion. We have a lot of guest stars that have been confirmed, and just most recently, we had Anthony DeLongis confirmed and his wife, Mary DeLongis. So that will be Adrian, Paul, Elizabeth Grayson, Jim Burns, F. Brom McAsh, David Abramowitz, and Anthony DeLongis as confirmed guests. And hopefully that John Mosby and Carmel McPherson will continue to let everybody know online socially who will be continually updated on that list, because that will be awesome. I mean, this is going to be a huge convention. It's, I think, the convention that all the fans have been waiting for, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's just going to be one heck of a good time because Highlander fans, like I said, we are passionate fans, and whatever we can do here at Blood of Kings to help, we definitely want to make sure that John and Carmel know that we are behind them 100%, and the fans are too. So make sure that you continue to check the HighlanderWorldwide.com gathering convention updates on their website. Now, booking for both hotel and ticket packages are open. To make sure that you're going to get the convention package that you want, because a lot of them have to do with autographs and being able to meet and greet with the celebrities that are going to be there. And then also, there are going to be different variations of those packages. And most importantly, on Friday of that week, of that convention, is when you're going to be able to do your specific classes, like the Sword Experience. And I'm sure that F. Brom McAsh and Anthony DeLongis are also going to run classes there too. So that is between Friday, October 20th, and Sunday, October 22nd of this year. And also, Mike, this is something that's going to be really fun. We are going to have a fan meetup and greet up and eat up on Thursday night. So that will be October 19th. Thursday, October 19th, 2017, Blood of Kings is going to have our traditional meet and greet with all the fans before the big convention starts. So that will also be a lot of fun. Also, pretty big news in the realm of what's going on with Highlander extracurricular activities. We have the Sword Experience. And I'm just going to go through the list of all the great events that are going to be coming up, especially almost immediately as this podcast is released. We're going to have April 30th in Calgary, Alberta, Canada at the Chinese Cultural Center. We have May 12th in Cheyenne, Wyoming at the Cheyenne Comic Con. And then it goes a little bit international for a couple weekends. We have May 28th in Tauranga, New Zealand at the Armageddon Expo, and June 3rd in Wellington, New Zealand at the Armageddon Expo. And then back in the U.S., on June 24th in Knoxville, Tennessee at the Knoxville Convention Center. But then in July starts the really impressive European tour. And July 16th in Ireland at Trim Castle, July 19th in England at Warwick Castle, and July 26th, France at Chateau de Chantilly. So if you are really interested in packaging up that European tour and trying to make a bundle experience out of it, make sure that you always stay in contact with Carmel McPherson. Yes, she's the same Carmel McPherson who's going to be running the 25th anniversary convention. And she can be reached at highlandertours1592@gmail.com. I think that's going to be an excellent opportunity. And I don't know, maybe if we petition really hard, Mike, we can still get you that opportunity to have the Sword Experience in your backyard. And I don't know, I think that'd be a lot of fun. Do you have enough room for about 40 people?
It might be a little tight, but we could work it out. And July 31st is my birthday, so if Adrian wants to come here and do the Sword Experience in my backyard, that's fine. That'd be a great birthday present for him.
You know what? I think he has an opening, because he's going to be coming back from France, so who knows? Who knows, Highlander? Who knows? So there's a lot of stuff going on. We have the Highlander Worldwide Convention. We have the European Tour, but most importantly, not that those aren't important, but most importantly for Blood of Kings, we have a really special contest that's going on right now, and it started with episode 33, Surviving the Game, also known as Highlander 101. We announced that brand new contest on the air, and it is a Twitter and social media-based contest. Our goal here for this contest is to celebrate and welcome new fans to Highlander and to get more followers on Twitter at Blood of Kings Pod. That's our Twitter page online on Twitter. So here's how you enter, and here's a couple of the contest rules. If you have a Twitter account And not everyone does, but in order for you to enter this contest, you'll have to create a Twitter account. If you have a Twitter account, please follow us on Twitter at Blood of Kings Pod and reshare and quote our tweets, because we usually tweet out our episodes and some of the responses to those episodes. So please reshare and quote our tweets using the hashtag Highlander101. Or you can tag us on Twitter on your own tweets, Highlander related, if you want it to be, at Blood of Kings Pod using the hashtag, again, Highlander101. You can also use Facebook posts to enter the contest by telling people to follow us on Twitter using the hashtag Highlander101. So this is essentially the hashtag Highlander101 contest. Now, why are you doing this? What's so important about this contest? Well, if you want to win this contest, you follow the rules. And most importantly, you have to use the hashtag of Highlander101. But if you win, and if we pick your entry, you will win a signed copy of John Mosby's Fearful Symmetry, An Essential Guide to All Things Highlander. This is actually the most perfect book for new fans of Highlander, and it's really great for old fans because I think, Mike, it's one of the most in-depth books, not just about covering the lore, but also a lot of the in-depth behind the scenes as well, because John was there from, I believe, well, he's always been a fan of Highlander, but I know that he has been really behind the scenes from Highlander 2 up until now. And he's also one of the co-convention runners for the Highlander 25th Gathering Convention in October, along with Carmel. So please, please, please make sure that you use the hashtag 101, Highlander 101, and enter your chance for winning that book. It's a fantastic book. And John is also a fantastic writer about Highlander. He has covered many, many, many things. We are going to run this contest through the month of May, where we will pick the winner on our one-year anniversary of actually launching the Blood of Kings podcast. I can't believe it's been a year almost, Mike. What do you think about
That's crazy. Because I can still remember
editing the show for
you
a
and,
year.
You and Kevin doing the Fandom Podcast Network four-parter. And I was listening to the car, and like Jill was with me, and she's like, she goes, "Is that Norm?" And she goes, "He sounds like a professional." I'm going, "No, it's just Norm."
That's just all in the editing and special effects. I really don't sound that great. Mike, you make me sound great.
Okay, I'll take all the credit for it. And the pay.
So that's it. And the pay. The $20 is yours. Kevin's up on that. That's your pay. So that's pretty much it for what's going on around the Highlander Roundtable. And I think we're all gassed up and ready to go, Mike. So what do you say we head on out of Joe's and let's get to the matter at hand?
I think that is a good plan. You could be Xavier with that that tactician there.
A master's tactician. All right. I'm going to sneak a bottle out here, so we'll charge that on Kyle's Fandom Podcast Network account.
Okay. He can write it off. He knows how.
So one of the reasons why we wanted to do this show, Mike, is because we've had so much fun and really, really incredible participation on the Blood of Kings Facebook fandom page. I think one of the things that is really impressive about the group of fans that we've had joined the page and come to on Facebook and really participated in the thrust of what we do here is that we get hit with so many different questions all the time, and it's really hard sometimes to try and answer every single possible question that comes through the Facebook feed, because as the way the Facebook works, you know, it's very real time. Someone posts something and then whatever is on top gets bumped down, and then whoever posts something on top of that gets bumped down. So it's kind of hard to retrieve some of the older posts and actually get into the thick of why people answered questions. And that's one of the things that we pride ourselves here on Blood of Kings, is to get engaged with a lot of the listeners and to answer their questions and have that kind of dynamic back and forth and really, really become the fans that we've always wanted to share our fandom with, and not just be social media fans, because there's a little bit of that stigma with social media fans saying like, oh, I'll like something and I'll hit the like button, or I'll heart something, or I'll emoji something. But I think that we have really dedicated fans on the Blood of Kings Facebook page, and they have come up with some really fantastic questions in the past, but we've never really dedicated ourselves here on the show to find a way to really delve deeply into those questions. So one of the things that I wanted to do with this show is to to siphon off some of the questions that I started on an official post on Facebook. And I did that a week ago when we were recording the collectible card game episode. And there have been a flood of questions that have come in. And I think that's fantastic, because I think that means that our fans are really kind of paying attention to what we're doing, and they really want to get involved. But how did this all start? What was kind of like the impetus of all of these questions? And Mike, I would like for you to read probably the first main question that came in from James Moberly. Now, James, he's really involved on the page. As a matter of fact, after we did Kurgan Rising, he posted some really fantastic covers from an old Dynamite series of the Kurgan. I think it was like a 5-issue miniseries. But he asked a very specific question about music. So what did James have to say?
Say, hey, guys, how's it going? I've enjoyed your podcast and look forward to what's going to come in the future. I wanted to ask whether you guys will consider doing an episode specifically on covers that covers the music of Highlander. As the fans well know, music, especially rock music, has been a major staple of the franchise from the beginning. But as it continues, the choice of music has evolved with it. For example, Bonnie Portmore would later become a memorable staple in its own right. I think it would be fun to hear you guys discuss the entire musical catalog history of Highlander, which would include soundtracks and scores in both the music and TV movies and TV shows. In your opinions, what worked and what didn't work? What are your favorite individual tracks or entire albums? How would you rank from best to worst? And also, would you like to see future soundtrack scores for future movies and TV shows? What bands, artists, notable Hollywood composers would you like to hear? Given Highlander's history with rock music, would you be open to hearing new genres like pop, techno, country, hip-hop, heavy metal, etc., being used or experimented with for the future? Would you do rock remain as the sole staple of Highlander's identity going forward? We'd love to know more from you guys. Thanks. I would love to hear a country soundtrack to Highlander.
That's a tough question.
Right? Because, you know, like, there's so many, in my opinion, like, I mean, like, Queen made so much of, like, the first Highlander movie, because it was just such a, like, even people who probably didn't check out the movie were, like, probably bought the soundtrack because it was Queen.
Right. And so I'd like to use this particular opening question as the launching point for this, because music and Highlander, I mean, those are pretty synonymous. Queen and Highlander, that's like hand in hand. That's like peanut butter and jelly, because not only did it open up with Princes of the Universe in the 1986 movie, but they used that, albeit in edited form, for the opening credit sequence of the TV show. So
they also used the ballad one when Heather dies. No One Can Live Forever. And a lot in the TV show, too.
Well, they used a lot of that. I mean, they used a lot of that soundtrack. Well, soundtrack and score, not so much score, but soundtrack. Soundtrack is different than score, and I'm not going to get into the finer points of that, but they used a lot of Queen's rock music especially for certain segments of the movie and the television show. But, I mean, you and I have had long discussions about how we would love to have seen Highlander done as a Western, so it would have been really cool to get kind of like that Western kind of flavor to it.
Yeah,
right?
The old Clint Eastwood, Sergio Marconi, was that the guy that did the sound, the movies, like The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, the music?
Ennio Morricone.
Because
that's the Italian in me coming out.
Yeah, you look so Italian, Norm.
Right?
But, I mean, you have, because, I mean, like, we had talked before about, like, to do a Highlander movie, instead of doing the whole thing where they flash back and go forward, why not start off with a movie that's like, you know, like the guy's narrating, like a kind of like a voiceover, and it just goes back into the past and stays there for the whole movie. Because right. I mean, that would be a great way to do a Western. So you got a guy running around with a six shooter and a samurai. How cool is that?
And all done with a Western flavored theme, you know, and I think that it can be done kind of in a modern way, but I don't know. You know, that's a tough thing. I mean, music is really individual and inclusive to so many different people in so many different ways. It's hard to project how music is going to figure out, especially when Chad Stahelski's movies are concerned, because I think one of the big things here, and maybe this is where James is going with this question. I'm kind of reading between the lines a little bit, but are we still going to get that opening, you know, here we are, born to be kings. That's a big deal. That's fingerprints of Highlander.
That's huge. I mean, and like...
And what if the movie doesn't start that way? How is that going to make people... Is it going to rub fans the wrong
way? And what modern band do you use as a queen to place in there? I'm trying to think right now, and I can't really think of anybody. But I'm old, so...
I mean, let's put I don't know if this is going to be a popular opinion. It's probably going to be a very unpopular opinion, but let's put the truth where the truth is, in my opinion. It's Freddie Mercury that really sells
right.
it. Right? I mean, Queen is great, Brian May and his guitar is great, and the harmonies are great, but when it really comes down to selling Queen, it's Freddie Mercury.
Definitely.
I mean, you can have great... Most bands are great. They're great. They're great musicians. They're very talented and stuff like that. But Journey is not Journey without Steve Perry, right?
Well, I mean, I've always been a fan of like the musicians in like Journey and Queen, because I like Roger Taylor as the drummer, and I'm trying to think of the bass player's name. The bass players never get any love,
unless you're Geddy right. Lee from Rush.
Then he's like the love meister.
So. So that's a great opening question, James. I mean, that's something that I don't think that we're going to be able to really get that much further into on this show, because I do want to dedicate an entire episode to talking about this, because, I mean, throw a stone and you're either going to be popular or unpopular in your opinion when it comes to music, especially when it comes to music dealing with Highlander.
I'm sure after this episode comes out, the Facebook page is going to be a buzz about some of these topics and questions. So let's see what the fans have to say. The other fans.
I hope so. You're right, Mike. So moving forward, this came directly from the list that I posted on April 10th, and I'm going to read them in order of how they were submitted. So the very first question after James' question, which wasn't actually on that list, it's just something I wanted to start off the show with, Domingo Ruby's Ailman, and forgive me everybody if I butcher your name, because it's very well possible that I will. Domingo Ruby's Ailman wrote, excluding the McLeods, which immortal do you think would win the game? All franchises, movie, series, animated series, etc. Which immortal do you think would win the game, taking the McLeods out of the equation? Mike, let's start with you.
Okay, my opinion with that one, because he's such a...
Let's break this down first. Let's break this down into the maybe... Do you read that as being individually, like which immortal would win the movie series, the TV series, the animated series?
I think he's opened it up to everything, so I'm going to go with... I would put my money on Mythos, since he's such a survivor.
I'm going to take Mythos out of this equation, too. That's just too easy. That's like saying, what's the greatest weapon in science fiction history? And someone will say a lightsaber. Yeah, right. Okay. I get it. The lightsaber is. But it's too easy. I want you to flesh. I'm taking
Chimoli.
It out.
he'll dazzle them with his magic.
And his great perm.
Yeah.
That's a tough question, I think. You know, I mean, like, I think Mythos is a great answer, really, to be honest with you. I mean, he is... But he was written that way.
I mean, he'd been around for 5,000 years, right?
Yeah, but so was Kronos, and so was Caspian, and so was Silas. So what makes him more special than them?
Because I want Mythos to win. I don't want those guys to win.
All right. No, that's fair. I personally don't think that Mythos would win the game. I think that Mythos would make the game continue.
He would manipulate it to his advantage. Which means keeping his head on his neck.
Yeah, see, and if that's the case, then it's either he wins the game or he just lets the game continue so that nobody wins the game. And I think he's more along that line.
Right. He's not known for putting his neck out on the line.
I guess, though, we're going to have to give Domingo a concrete answer. So you're going to go with Mythos. Which immortal do you think would win the game all franchises? And no McClouds. I have been a really big fan of... Well, I liked Graham Ash, but he died. Let's see. I don't know. Most of the immortals usually get killed before we get a chance to even get any traction on them. And most of them were evil. Have you noticed that? Like, there's like only a handful of good immortals that aren't McClouds.
That's true.
Amanda. I want Amanda to win everything.
Yeah, that goes without saying, but... Yeah, she'd be a good cared one. She survived. She didn't lose her head.
You're right. And I would get totally behind that idea. I loved Caerdwin as an immortal. Okay, so are you going to stick with Mythos, or are you going to stay, or are you going to change your mind to Caerdwin?
My money's on Mythos, but my heart's on Caerdwin. Let's put it that way.
My heart's on Caerdwin too. So that's our answer. We're going to stick to it, and I'm sure that everyone's going to have their opinion on it when we release this show. So moving on, John Bowersox wrote, oh gosh, another Mythos question. Who would win this fight, Mythos versus Darius? I think that would be an epic fight. And there are a couple things that we have to caveat, obviously, that Darius is actually still alive when Mythos encounters him, because Darius died in season one. And Mythos didn't come on the scene until season three. So taking that timeline out of the equation, now we have to deal with when they actually would meet.
Well, with that one, you have to put in the parameters of, like, you know, Darius was a priest on holy ground. Oh, we can't forget holy ground.
Yes.
For a long, long time. So I would say you either have to go before he became the priest and go back to when he was a warrior. And because Mythos and Darius would have been contemporaries, so I think you could, if you set that parameter on it, I would have probably gone with Darius to win at that time.
See, I would go with Mythos to win, and here's why, because I believe that a great general doesn't necessarily have to be the greatest warrior. I think he has to be the greatest strategist, but not the greatest warrior. This is a 1v1 fight.
I agree with you on that part of it. But the thing I'm thinking about is that, like, because I'm basing this decision on the book that came out a bunch of years ago that had, like, you know, it was the whole thing of, like, how Darius became, and leading up to, like, why Band of Brothers was an episode. Right. And Darius was the leader, but he was also... the way they describe them in the book, I guess a bit more bloodthirsty. And I've never got the impression that Mythos is a good sword fighter. I think he's good enough to get the job done and to keep his head, but I think he tries to stay out of trouble.
Well, like you said, in Indiscretions, just because I don't like to fight doesn't mean
right.
I can't. So that was something that really was enlightening to Mythos, because remember what he did, and forgive us our trespasses, Mythos was like, oh, I'm so poor, pitiful Mythos, I slip and fall on gravel, I'm not the greatest sword fighter. But then he pulls that dagger out, and Stephen Keen's like, oh, this was your plan all the time. And he goes, you bastard, sticks and stones.
Yeah.
You know, and Mythos doesn't fight unless he absolutely knows that you're engaging him on his terms.
Right, I mean, he definitely fights to win, so...
Yeah,
I still just because I remember from reading that particular book that, like, do you remember the title of that book? I'm fuzzy on that one right now.
That wasn't Scotland the Brave, was it?
No.
No. It was Shadow of Obsession.
That's it. Yeah.
Yep. Shadow of Obsession.
Yeah, that was a really great book if you like Daria, so, and Grayson, because it had like everybody in it except Mythos. Right.
Well, I'm going to go with kind of the tried and true sword arm and the one that, I mean, Mythos had to basically fight to survive for close to 2,000 years before Darius came on the scene. So I'm going with, this time I'm going with actual years of experience, because these are the harder years. I mean, you're talking about the transition from the Bronze Age to the Iron Age,
right?
You know, and where survival was a little bit more extreme, I think, when it came to the Four Horsemen. I mean, even though they were riding around and they were, yes, the Four Horsemen were amazing, I still think that it was trying to eke out a more meager existence, working a lot harder than, say, Darius with his giant army that was, you know, at his beck and call. And yeah, sure, he could like solo fight people if he wanted to, but I also think that he could probably risk more against a mortal fighter because he is immortal.
Well, his entire army was built of immortals, wasn't it?
Darius's yeah. army? That I don't remember.
I'm trying. That's sticking in my head. I'm not saying it's right, but I think he had a large number of immortals in his army.
Yeah, but they could all be Michael Christian level immortals.
That's true.
Big deal.
So, I mean, you if you're going to be the top dog with a bunch of immortals, as you're, even if they're just your main lieutenants, you got to be, you know, you got to have the moxie to go to back it up. So I'm going to stick with Darius.
Yeah, but you also... I'm going to stick with Mythos. So that's a draw right. there. And you're right, John, it would be an epic fight. And this is not an easy question to answer, because there's these two. I mean, you're talking about pillars of Highlander. It's not like, you know, who would win a fight between, say, I don't know, James Koltek and Richie Ryan. You know, Koltek has all that quickening energy in him, and Richie is just this, you know, newcomer street thug. So these two guys, Mythos and Darius, I mean, their legends are made on these guys, right? So it's kind of like, I think a closer fight would be, you know, who do you think would win in a fight between, say, Darius and Ramirez?
Yeah.
They're closer to the same age, or Darius and the Kurgan.
I think it comes down to the Darius or the Kurgan. The Kurgan was pretty much always the same kind of Kurgan guy.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a whole, we didn't write that. We didn't submit that question. So we can't answer that one right now.
You're right. So thanks for that question, John. That was really great and also very tough to answer. I think that you can spend many days trying to answer that question. But moving on, we have Vince Stefanelli, who's no stranger to our show. We actually did a complete two-parter based on one of his ideas, that was Mortal Sins. So Vince says, I still have the hair ties from back in the 90s. Did you guys get those?
The laugh says it all.
Yep, that's a pretty easy answer. Now, did you have long hair when we were in school, Mike? I had long hair. Yeah. Did you have long hair?
I cut it off after I got
married. We both had long hair. Okay, so we both had long hair and we both had the hair ties. Vince, if Mike and I weren't reading our many, many, many binders of Highlander collectible card game pages, we would be reading the Davis Panzer catalogs, the official catalogs with all that merchandise, because... That's essentially like every time we got a new catalog. Hey, look, there's an Adrian hair tie. You know, there was the McLeod bowl. You know, there was the Chinese knot. There was the Celtic dragon with matching belt buckle. Highlander was our fashion too.
Yeah. I had the Celtic knot was the one I had. I think I still have it around here somewhere.
Yeah, so we totally did. We got those, and I think a whole lot more.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I think if you dug deep, Mike, you would probably be able to find your Watcher's Pendant. I still have my Watcher's Pendant.
It's probably in the same box that has the hair tie.
And then we also got, I mean, I know this is a little off topic from your question, but I think a lot of us bought a lot of stuff from the catalogs. We got our pewter pens. We got our, you know, dragon head letter openers that Mike is actually, I'm going to screenshot that and put that on the page. I know that Andy Sloan, he also had long hair, and he also laments the fact that when he cut his off, he's no longer using his hair ties. So those are a big deal, because I think that in some way that allowed us to cosplay Duncan a little bit, because then the official catalog also had his official overcoat. So you could get the overcoat, you could get the hair ties, you can get the belt buckle. The katanas, you had it all. You could cosplay that till the cows come home. So, yes, Vince, we loved him. We still have him. And one of these days, maybe we'll get back to him.
I still have, I don't think my hairs are going to go back out that way. I still have my Highlander coffee mug, too. It survived this long.
That's right. Yep. That's right. The with the logo on it, the white.
Yeah, with the castle on the one side and the logo on the other.
Yeah, man, those were good times. So if Kareem Dishmaki, if you're listening to this show, and I will post this on the Davis Panzer page. I don't know if you have like an Area 51 or a Lost Ark of the Covenant kind of warehouse where you can dig up some of the old merchandise, but for the 25th anniversary, let me tell you something. You can make money hand over fist if you actually had any of that merchandise left. T-shirts, any of the old trinkets, jewelry, goblets, glassware, collectibles, hair ties, belt buckles, you name it. If you find it, you will sell it. So I'm just putting that out there in the ether of the Highlanderverse. So Janet Strong actually has this really interesting question, and I'm gonna answer this in a couple of different ways, because she came in new to Blood of Kings, and she actually said, "I'm new to Highlander HWW. That's Highlander Worldwide. How do I access your ... What is it? A podcast? Sorry, I'm so clueless." And that's okay, Janet. That's okay. We're actually really glad that you joined Blood of Kings, which is a whole different entity altogether than Highlander Worldwide. Highlander Worldwide is the official Highlander Club. We are just a fan enthusiastic podcast that deals with Highlander. But yes, it is a podcast. And how do you access it? Well, you can always go online. You can find us on thefandompodcastnetwork.com, because we are part of the Fandom Podcast Network umbrella of podcasts that also has Culture Clash and Time Warp and we have a variety of different shows that you can choose from, but we are the Highlander specific show that is on that network. So no apologies necessary. We are actually really glad that you're with us. And there is a follow-up question to that was on Facebook, Mike, because Janet's question was followed up by Domingo. Domingo asked another question, and he said, "Pardon my ignorance, is it paid content?" And I wrote back, which I think is the only response that I actually wrote back on that thread. I said, "No, absolutely not. This is not paid content. This is 100% completely free to anyone who would like to listen to it. I know that there are some networks out there that charge for premium content or for advanced content or for behind-the-scenes stuff. We don't do any of that on the Fandom Podcast Network. This is for you. We do it because we're passionate about putting out this content. There are no hidden charges, no extra fees, no contracts to sign. Just show up on our website, download the podcast or stream it, however you will listen to it. That is all for you, free of charge."
I will say that if you slip me an extra bucks, I'll send you the ones with all the cursing in it.
$20 to Mike. He'll get you the extra footage there. So, but no, those are great questions. And Janet, again, thank you for writing in. Thank you for asking about that. And if you have friends that are new to this kind of format, and if you'd like to have them also involved with the Facebook page, please invite them, your friends, to the page, and please let them know where they can find our show. So thank you for writing in. That was a fantastic question. Now, this is a little bit of a tougher question, Mike, that's coming up from Chris Risher.
Oh.
And he writes, "Excluding Connor, Kurgan, and Ramirez, if you could choose one character from the existing Highlander universe to show up in some form in the upcoming reboot, who would it be?" And he's talking about the Chad Stahelski.
Okay.
Reboot. That's a tough question.
I got it's easy one for me. Number one would be Chmoly. Right. Number two would be Joe Dawson.
That's a really good choice. One of them.
Yeah, one of them. Sure. No, definitely. To me, it's got to be Joe and the Watchers.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to fact check you here with the source. How would you bring Joe back after being murdered by the Guardian in the source?
We're rebooting.
Okay.
So
you want to bring Joe Dawson back as a Watcher?
Bring Joe and the Watchers back. Because think about how integral that was to the TV show. I mean, like,
the Watchers were.
Yeah, like when they introduced Joe and the Watchers, It's just like, you find out there's just this secret society that's been, and like, we don't, I mean, I didn't read the second issue of the comic yet. Did they go into who those guys were lurking around talking to their wrist?
I haven't actually, as of this day, I've just got my books in the mail today, so.
Okay.
I'm trying to stay away from that electronic comic book stuff. I feel dirty.
Okay.
Not reading actual comic books.
Okay, because there's no print. Norm doesn't know what to do. But anyway, like, that was, to me, in the series, like, once you had, like, the Hunters and then the Watchers and, like, that whole thing, and, like, there's a secret society of mortals that's going around checking out these guys and keeping an eye on things. I think that, to me, is, like, that was one of the most important things next to the the Band of Brothers episodes that made the early Highlander stuff really kick into gear.
Right. No, I totally agree. That'll be interesting how they're going to bring the Watchers in, especially Joe, if we're going to go that route, how they're going to bring them in with today's kind of modern surveillance. Because let's be honest with you, from 1993, when the Watchers came in earnest after season one, end of season one, beginning of season two, the technology that is being used now to surveil people and to keep tabs on people and the kind of stealth technology that you can use to follow people, I mean, that's like leap years.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to have to consider that when they do the new movie. Are they going to set it in 86 again or just keep it more towards the past? Or are they going, if they're going to do it with a more, you know, 2017 kind of boot, then maybe when the quickenings hit, they're like an EMP and they fry technology? We'll, I mean, story-wise, it's going to be an important thing they're going to have to consider to keep the, as much as the music and, like, you know, who the new queen is going to be and whatever, they need to keep that in the place to, like, you know. And I think, but still, I mean, like, guys taking notes by hand. Some people still use longhand or shorthand.
Well, I mean, it'd be neat if they did that, you know, for some reason, just to be traditional, I guess. You know, that'd be kind of neat. Because we did see in John Wick 2 that the Assassin's Guild that they belonged to were doing things in a very traditional way.
Mm-hmm.
They were using old keyboards. They were using kind of like the suction mail tube system. Even though that obviously when they put out their contracts on the network, that was a little bit more modern. But the inner workings of that was very antiquated. I thought it was a nice kind of difference of techniques there.
Yeah, it almost had like a steampunk feel cut to it. Because you would think that they would want to keep it under wraps and not have it leak out there accidentally.
I mean, I like the idea of having Joe in there. I like the idea of having the Watchers in there. And I agree. I think that I probably would like Joe, too. And if for anything, that character would be that human connection with the audience. You know, there's always has to be that fish out of water character that allows the audiences to grab hold of that. And who knows, Joe's a man's name. Joe's also a woman's name.
They could do a little,
that would be a kind of neat twist.
And,
yeah.
And I mean, the other thing they could do is, like, if you have the Watchers in, then you're going to have Adam Pearson as a Watcher checking out the Kurgan and Connor and just, you know, kind of checking out the competition.
Well, it'd be kind of neat in a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of way. If you saw another one out there named Adam Pearson, then all of a sudden there'll be like a small hint that he is immortal without even saying mythos, right? That's just a little more for building the trilogy and kind of, you know, kind of letting the audiences in on the inside joke. So, great. That was a great question. I think that Chris, I think that Mike and I are both on board with Joe Dawson in some form, and definitely the Watchers for sure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Now, John wrote in again. John Bowersox wrote in again, and he says, "I have one more question, guys. Let's say Darius Werner Stalker hadn't died. What kind of episodes do you think we would have gotten in the second season with Darius?"
Some damn good ones, I'm guessing.
Well, I'm thinking that since Darius was always kind of the moral compass for Duncan, I think that he would have just been a lot more of Duncan's sounding board in a lot of episodes.
Well, I mean, I'm going back to the book that I read about Darius and all that stuff and Grayson, so the one thing I could see, like, maybe because Duncan always seemed like the hyper teenager when you put him next to Darius. Because he's like, oh, he's like, everything was just like, you know, emotions and passion and just like, well, I must avenge and blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, and like Darius having the experience of being that old and just like, dude, chill. And he would, you know, maybe relate a story or there would be a flashback. I could see a nice flashback of him like, well, when I was rolling this army into the gates of France, blah, 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 you know, and just you could have had so many great flashbacks about Darius. Seeing what the kind of man he was, and then how he fights this, this good immortal at the gates of Paris, and when he takes his head, he gets a good quickening, and instead of like the dark quickening with Duncan, he goes the opposite, where he was like kind of like a violent, unnecessary evil, but violent, you know, warlord type guy, who's now like a becomes a priest and gives up everything. So I mean,
yeah, it would have been neat to see his flashbacks for sure.
I mean, that's one of the things that, as a Highlander fan and being a history buff and a sword nut, Highlander is just like sort of like, you know, that perfect perfect storm of creative stuff that I like to view. So when you had all like the swords and all that stuff rolled in there, it's just so awesome. So the history factor is always nice.
Yeah, and we would have gotten flashbacks with Grayson, so we could have brought in James Horan back into the fold.
Definitely.
You know, we would have seen maybe how Darius dealt with the same kind of impetuousness that Grayson had, because Grayson being a second in command was always kind of like the one that was the more emotional and more kind of like my emotions are on my sleeve. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm acting a little bit more impulsively, and there could have been those great moments where they were having, you know, Darius's, you know, moss or mold form tea. And he's like, I remember when Grayson asked me that same question, and could have taken Duncan aback. It's like, Grayson asked you the same question that I'm asking you? He's like, well, yeah. You know, it's like, even though we're immortal, we're still human.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's something that I think that people take, like they lose sight of a little bit, is that immortality is just, it's just a different layer of these people who were raised and shaped as human beings. They still have the same frailties and weaknesses, ambitions, you know, desires.
It's like the last episode when we were talking about Graham Ash and his quote about like, you fight to live, but you have to live life.
Yeah. Great quote. He says, we fight to stay alive, Duncan. Don't forget.
Exactly.
To
live. Yeah.
And that's a fantastic quote. And that's again, one of those central key points of Highlander that we always love talking about, is like, what is immortality and what does that really mean? But I agree, Mike. I think that we would have definitely seen a lot more of the flashbacks with Darius. I think it would have been interesting to see how long he would have dodged James Horton and what he would have done to try and find a strategy against the Hunters. Because they accelerated the Hunter storyline because of what happened. We never saw, well, this is not true. We saw cutaway scenes that have been previously filmed of Werner Stalker as Darius in the Hunters episode, but you never saw him with new lines or any new footage because he died before that happened. So it would have been neat to have seen Darius and James Horton build that, I guess it would have been, well, James Horton would have built that hatred against Darius in the church. And there would have been great conversations between, you know, Peter Hudson, who's a fantastic actor, and Werner Stalker, who also was a fantastic actor. And those kind of those veiled threats that keep getting volleyed back and forth. But just think of how Horton would have reacted when Darius became Darius, right? Not the priest Darius, but the general, the Gaul general,
right?
Darius.
I mean, because that was the thing that fueled Grayson. So, like, he wanted to rule the world with Darius in command. So that was his whole passion, and that's why, like, if you think about it, like, they could have easily had some nice scenes with Duncan, where, like, you know, Darius is relaying that and telling him the story, and they do a flashback of a conversation. It's very similar to what Duncan, because, like, they had that same kind of youthful annoyance that, like, you know, like a teenager and his dad, you know. So it's like, because sometimes, like, they're all like passion, piss and vinegar. They're not like thinking about, like, you know, just kind of having the ability to have a little forethought and think about how everything lays out in the land. So it could have just been some fantastic acting, some fantastic character development.
Yeah. Yeah, the possibilities there are really they're kind of endless, because they could have gone so many different great ways. So thanks, John, for that question. Now, James, whose question that we read at the very beginning of the show, he actually wrote in, after finishing the new Highlander American Dream comic series from IDW, will you guys go into other comics too? I think the Dynamite series made a worthy addition to the lore, and that the 3030 one-off was an interesting attempt to do sci-fi heavy metal take on it with this abstract art style. So, yeah, I mean, we're gonna cover the rest of the IDW series. And I think that the reason why that we're waiting and we haven't really read them, like, you know, successively as they've come in, is because I think we want to do like one big massive binge, and then kind of like a graphic novel, and then talk about it all at once. So I don't think we're going to do individual shows like we did with the first one, because the first one, in that episode, we covered just a lot of the behind the scenes and the excitement behind the release of this comic. But we are definitely going to cover The American Dream in its entirety once all of the collected issues have come out. And it's only a 4-issue limited series, right? Or 5?
I think it's 4. I could be wrong, though.
Yeah, it's 4-issue series, though. So, but with the other series, like the Dynamite series, I haven't read any of those.
No, actually, I didn't get the chance to check those out when they were out on the stands. So first we'd have to track them down, and then, yeah. I mean, I would be up for doing other comics as like, maybe do like a comic review for a bunch of Highlander comics.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that Kevin and I talked about on the audiobook of The Kurgan Rising on episode 34, we said that if it is a licensed property from the license holders, this being Panzer Davis or Lionsgate or any of the major license holders for Highlander, we have to consider that as being canon, because these are stories that have been created under the auspice and license of the property. So if these comic books are the Dynamite comics, I'm not saying that they're not, I just haven't read them yet, then whatever has been created inside those stories affect the lore and the canon. And so I think that's something that we're definitely going to have to take a look at, being all things Highlander podcast, right?
Definitely.
So yes, James, we will definitely cover the rest of the IDW, and we will let you know when we take a look at the other comic book series. And who knows, if you would like to maybe guest star on it and talk about it, because I know how passionate this guy is about the Highlander comics, because after we did Kurgan Rising, he posted like all the covers of the Kurgan background story that was also a Dynamite comic. So definitely, definitely, definitely. We love comics and we love Highlander, and I think this is a great opportunity to talk about both. Now, as we round out like the last couple questions here, because they're all from the same person, our friend Jill Berticus, she wrote in some really interesting questions, and she is a huge fan and supporter of the show. I know that Kyle and Kevin and Davis had a chance to spend some time with her at the Lakeland Convention last December, and I know that she has always supported us on our Highlander 2 projects that we've done here on Blood of Kings, especially the two-parter that we did, the Highlander 2, the special edition, and the commentary there as well. So I'd like to, let's tackle her first question.
All right.
So Jill wrote, if the Immortals are sent or created for some purpose, they are being dumped here as helpless infants. If they appear as infants because there's no other way, all right. But why would there be no other way? Why risk Immortals stuck as children? Because she's talking about the foundlings. Everyone knows that if an Immortal is found, they usually remember them being found as a baby or being handed to somebody off as an orphan. So why do you think that is, Mike?
Well, if, and you can correct my, I haven't watched it in a long time, so you can correct my fuzziness and memory here. But wasn't it kind of like the whole Immortal thing was like a penal colony?
Oh, on Zeist, yeah, when we were doing, when we're talking Highlander
so
2,
if
yeah.
They're being sent down here, it's a punishment, and so I guess sending them down as babies is pretty vicious to do. So I guess that goes along with the punishment. That would be my analogy.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely opens them up to being vulnerable for sure. But even more that they're infants is that they're mortal infants.
Right.
Yeah. Because in Highlander 2, when General Katana captured immortals, because he could just kill mortals, when he captured immortals like Connor and Ramirez, he sent them into the future, which is technically, in our perspective, our distant past. And they were scattered throughout time. So we have to believe that Mythos, Kronos, Caspian, Silas, they all ended up being in the Bronze Age. You know, Ramirez, you know, he was, 2,240 something odd years before Connor McLeod. And then Connor McLeod was, you know, only in 1518, died 1536. They were all foundlings. They were all babies at one point in time. But I think that's what happened when Katana sent them through, well, in the Highlander original cut, sent them from the planet Zeist to Earth, and they reverted back into infants and then became mortal, then grew up as mortal, then died their mortal death, then became immortal.
But isn't there something to the lore that in order for them to their immortality kick in, they have to die a violent death? You just can't die of old age?
Nope, then you would just die of old age. So we talked about this in Rules of the Game. If there was something like a car crash or being run over by a cart like Ramirez was, or being shot like Richie was, or dying on the field of battle, which a lot of these immortals did. You know, Connor did against the Frasers in 1536, and Duncan did. They all died something that was just more than just, you know, dying in your sleep. You know, and I'm not even sure if we even covered disease, like if an immortal in their mortal form died of cancer. You know, that's not a non-violent death. You know, that's something that's, I don't think we've ever talked about. That's an interesting thing. So So they are sent as children because I think that that is a way that they have been, you're right, I think that's a good way of explaining it, Mike. They were punished, they were reset, and they were sent to like live this new life again. And whether or not their immortality got triggered, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, because I mean, if you think about it, like since it was supposed to be sort of like a major form of punishment, they come down like, and they're thrown throughout like a time period on Earth when, like, for the most part, where like they're, you know, it's a very violent times. Survival rates were like, you know, like your average human back in those days probably lived to be like maybe 20 or 30. Like a village elder is probably like 30. I would be at the village ancient at 52. Yeah,
you would be in the
pretty much. So, I feel like it some days, but that's. So, like, I mean, that's, if you think about it, that's a pretty vicious way to punish somebody. It's like you're thrown on Earth, you have no support system, you're just like someone finds you, or you just starve to death as an infant.
Yeah.
Or
no, I think that's completely
valid. Or like you're wailing your head off as an infant because you're starving, and some tiger lion comes over and eats you.
Also very valid, but unless that tiger killed you, you became immortal as a baby.
And then,
what good does that do you?
They just keep, wow, this is a really good food source. It never goes away. So you're like an immortal meal. So.
Yeah, you're kind of like, what do they call them, the vampires? You're a familiar?
I think they would call you a lunchbox.
Yeah, they would call you a morsel.
So. A morsel.
But that's a good question, Jill. I mean, it's something that's not really kind of tackled. It's kind of like usually goes with the lore, like and understood and kind of like swallowed wholesale. You're like, okay, yeah, I get that, sure, you know. And let's move on to the sword fighting. So I think both Mike and I agree that it's a really awesome way that and kind of sinister way that Katana punished the immortals for being rebels, and then sending them to the Earth or the future, and then having them kind of survive, you know, again, survival of the fittest, to see if they actually had the capacity to come back, win the prize, and reclaim their status back on Zeist or wherever they came from, you know, after Zeist was retconned. But She, I mean, that was a great point. And she actually asks some really interesting questions of this kind in the next couple questions, because her next question, she wrote, "It seemed to me the idea that a mortal's first death has to be violent pretty much came up on a whim so that the writers would have an excuse to push Duncan to kill Kate, not to mention push Amanda to kill Nick. Why does that idea make my teeth hurt?" Well, I mean, Jill, you're giving specific examples of what happened in Endgame and what happened in the last episode of The Raven, but the idea that a mortal's first death has to be violent didn't really come up on a whim. It came from later on, I mean, earlier on in 1986. I mean, Connor died his first death from being killed by the Kurgan. So that's not a whim. That was very
well
planned.
Yeah, I mean, they established all of these. Even Ramirez, like, ran over by a cart.
Right. So it can be used to facilitate a plot, and it can be used to be a convenience to write around certain things, but it's not a whim, in my opinion, because of how many different ways they've used that prior to the examples that you wrote in on your question. I think that those particular examples were just a case of the writing not being probably the best it could be. Now, Nick Wolfe wasn't going to die technically a violent death. He was being poisoned to death. So Amanda shot him at the end of The Raven. I think the episode was called Dead on Arrival, to save him from dying the slow death of being poisoned. So it wasn't a violent, abrupt death. Not the way that Duncan killed Kate in Endgames, because Duncan's like, "I love you, let's live forever," stab, "now you're immortal, and now we can live forever." That's not, in my opinion, good writing, right? It would have been actually even better if Duncan tried everything he possibly could to keep her from dying that way, and no matter what happened, the violence would have found him and eventually would have found her. You know, like robbers on a horse and cart, or maybe an immortal at the time going for him and ending up having her in the crossfire. You know, very much like Heather was when, you know, she was raped by the Kurgan after killing Ramirez. That's the kind of violence that follows immortals, not immortals choosing to do violence upon themselves for their own specific reason. That goes all the way into Timeless when Walter Graham killed Claudia to make sure that she stayed a concert pianist forever.
Or even,
you know, that's the same.
Even
impulse.
Richie, I mean, Duncan didn't kill Richie to make him immortal, even though he knew he was.
Right.
He wanted him to like live his life, you know, go down a certain path. If you don't become an immortal and you just do whatever, that's fine. But also, you know, gaining your own experiences. So I mean, that's why Duncan, you know, like the violence that happened that killed, you know, Richie and Tessa, but, you know, started Richie's immortality. So now it's a whole different life. It's like you gain different experiences, like if you're immortal or if you're, you know, not an immortal. There's something to the mortality. You learn different lessons.
Right. But also those acts of violence that happened, like say to Richie or to immortals who suffer like a natural violent death, that's because that's a natural happenstance and occurrence of what should have happened, not necessarily something that was planned like Duncan did to Kate. It's like, "I want Kate to be with me my entire life. I'm going to murder you in your sleep so you can be immortal." No, I agree, Jill. That's not the best way that they could have probably written that in the story. But as for going back to your original question, there are many cited examples of how that immortality was triggered from a violent death. And I think that just became more tradition than anything else. Okay, so her last question and our last question for the podcast is actually a really, really tough one to answer. This one is a big one for me, for Jill. Why would Jin K be with Kel? It's contradictory. He supposedly has standards and honor, and yet he stays with the man who murders innocents just because their lives intersected with Connor. I believe they are implying that Kel sold Jin K on the story of the faithless, honorless Duncan MacLeod murdering Kate on their wedding night, but now how is an honorable man going to look the other way on everyone else? I guess the best way for me to take a look at this question and answer it is that Jin Kei has, let's see, he served with the first emperor of China. And I think that was when he encountered his first death. That man and the man that you saw that joined Jacob Kell has had, what, 2 millennia of experience underneath his belt? Doesn't necessarily make him all the same man. So I don't know what Jacob Kell really sold him on, but the Jin Kei that died serving the Emperor of China and this man of honor and integrity also has a lot of other things going on inside of him as well. Do you think that Jacob Kell was able to sway a man of supposedly unfaltering honor the way he did with Jin Kei? Why would Jin Kei go after Duncan MacLeod and follow Jacob Kell?
I think it kind of comes along the lines of like mythos with Kronos. It's just like at a certain point time, you think one way, and as you progress, like, you know, things are different. You're lied to enough, you start to believe it. I think it doesn't make a lot of sense to me either, but at the same time, it's just like it was a story that they needed to happen in a certain way. So I think they just pushed it that way.
I think it's also possible that Jin Kei was probably trying to find a way to find his moment to take out Kell. You know, he could have, like, deep undercover agents. We've seen this all in police dramas and like DEA drug enforcement dramas. Deep, deep, deep cover agents have to do certain things that are morally questionable, and they have to follow a certain path in order to get to the true goal. And it's very well possible that Jin Kei said, you know what? I have to find a way to stop this power that's Jacob Kell. I'm not strong enough myself, but if I can work my way into the system deep enough and have him trust me, I might be able to find a way, a weakness to be able to take him out. Unfortunately, everyone drank the Kool-Aid at the dinner table, and Jacob Kell just pretty much killed everybody. But I think that Jin Kei was going to put up a fight at that dinner.
Yeah.
So why would somebody who was following him, supposedly following him blindly, put up a fight?
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes more sense. That, like, you know, he was just biding his time to, like, take out the bigger evil. So, and if they're going after immortals a lot of the time anyway, so like that's part of the game. So I think I could see the way you're thinking going down.
Yeah. And there, I mean, it would have been neat to have seen Jin Kei have seen something so atrocious that Jacob Kell did. He's like, nope, win, lose or draw, I have to find a way to take this guy out. And in doing so, I have to go deep into his organization in order to do that. Because a lot of the other immortals that were part of that organization were unexperienced, you know, and or kind of like the trash that Kronos was talking about when he tried to put a team together. I mean, you had guys like Cracker Bob, you had the guy with the two katars, you had kind of like the, I don't remember all these immortals' names because personally, I'm not the biggest fan of Endgame as a movie. But he had like a handful of thugs and Jin Kei. Doesn't kind of Jin Kei stick out like a sore thumb? I mean, you had this guy that literally could like ruin immortals with that staff of his. And he's chosen to keep company with all of these buffoons.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't seem like... Well, I just think that movie overall, it had some nice elements, but it was just like underwritten. They didn't really utilize the strength of the characters that they had, because you had a little, you had Mythos, you had Joe was in there, and you had like Duncan and Connor. Yep. So it's like you should have been able to pull off some really nice characterization stuff. Like Kate seemed like just kind of like, let's find a nice, pretty European looking girl and just throw in here. She doesn't really have to do anything except stand there and look pretty. She didn't have a lot going on.
Right. I might actually have to craft an episode where I'm going to say that Highlander Endgame is the Star Trek Generations of its lore. Because one of the things, I'm sorry, I'm completely going off topic, but I have to get this off my chest. Sorry, Jill. One of the things that I cannot stand is that if you're going to hand over a franchise from one hero to another or from one team to another, why do you have to kill the previous team or hero? Right? So why did Connor have to die? Didn't have to. I thought that was literally the most ludicrous plot point I have ever heard of. The same way that Kirk had to die in Generations. Just because Picard's going to take over, you have to kill off Kirk? Why do you have to do that? I think that's absolutely a ludicrous idea. I think that is just lazy writing.
Yeah, why?
So that's how
why couldn't Kirk have his nice little thing on the planet where he's living a happy life? And just
That's what I mean. I don't get that. And it's the same thing with Endgame, is that there are really interesting things that happened, but I think that, like, say, with Kate, Duncan murdering Kate to preserve her doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense in Duncan's character at all.
Right.
You know, and I say this all the time, and I'm usually, like, really positive about most of the stuff that I talk about with Highlander, but I'm just going to have to call a spade, and it's like, I just don't think that Highlander Endgame is a well-written movie for various reasons, and I think that Kevin's more of a fan of it than I am. I think you and I are pretty much on the same page. But to get back to Jill's question, I really do think that there could have been an opportunity for Jin K to have been trying to work Jacob Kell on the inside and never got his chance. And I think that's the best way to probably describe it.
Because
the whole part of, are they implying that Kell sold Jin K on the story of faithless, honorless Duncan MacLeod murdering Kate on their wedding night? I honestly think that Jin K wouldn't care. That's not his business.
Also, too, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, like, Jin K was probably biding his time, but, like, because Kell was the one who took all the quickenings, he was always a stronger immortal. Because it's like he had his little cronies to, like, round everybody up so he could take the better quickenings and advance his power and sorcery and all that kind of crap.
Yeah,
because I think the movie they showed us in the trailer was a better movie than what we actually wound up getting to see as a movie.
Yeah, they showed us some more interesting things, I think, in the trailer that made Jacob Kell a little bit more, I don't know, palatable.
Was it in the final movie? Was did they do the thing where he separates the sword into two? That was something in the trailer.
Yes, they did, but in the trailer he had that globe. I don't know. I'm going to have to watch it again.
I haven't seen it in a while either.
It doesn't resonate with me as much as, say, you know, as even I love 2. I think that 2, Highlander 2, the final, the special edition, is a far better movie than, say, Highlanders 4 and 5, Endgame and The Source, obviously The Source. So that's actually going to be a really fun show to do when we start, like, breaking down and ranking, like, all the movies and maybe having more of an open debate format about it. But I think Jill, for me, I think I'm going to stick with that Jin K is working completely on his own. And I think he has a very specific reason why he's going after Jacob Kell. And I think it has absolutely nothing to do with Duncan. I know that you have disagreement with the way that Duncan killed Kate for right after their marriage, but to be honest with you, I don't think that factors into why Jin K is doing anything like this at all. So, but that was our last question, Mike. So, any final thoughts? Any of those questions really stick out to you as something that you feel like you still want to chew on?
I'm flipping back here. No, I think we answered them all pretty well. There was a couple like that were, you know, I think it would be a good episode for us to sit down and, you know, wait for the American Dream series to finish up, read all those, and maybe check out some of the Dynamite run, and that way we can comment on those. Might be like an all comic episode. Definitely. Kind of thing. That might be fun.
Yeah, and I also think that looking at all the music, James Moberly's original question.
Would be a really good one.
You know, because you have a lot of different soundtracks. You have the Michael Kamen score and the Queen music from that soundtrack. Then you have the Stuart Copeland and Highlander 2. Then obviously we can go into the Roger Ballon of this TV series, and obviously like significant songs like Bonnie Portmore and how it was done originally by Lorena McKennitt in Highlander 3. There's a lot of signature stuff there. So I think that'll be a great show, and it'll be a very in-depth show. And I think you're right. I think the comic books is going to be a
really
in-depth show.
Since you just brought it up, I want to ask your opinion. What do you think of Roger Ballon in his music on the series?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. I loved his music and the way he scored the series. I think it was fantastic. And I also like some of the comedic elements because there are some signature things that he did with his music that, you know, themed certain and phrased certain emotional content of the series.
I got to say, though, like sometimes it annoys me because I've been watching episodes the last couple of days and as I've been working on a project. And sometimes it seems like a Bugs Bunny cartoon in the wrong moments. Sometimes really? I think he's kind of hit or miss. Like over, because maybe it's just because I'm listening to him now as opposed to when they first came out. Like that back then, I remember really enjoying a lot of what he was doing. But in hindsight, I don't think some of the, because I was watching something today and like, oh, what was the episode? Crap, I can't remember. It was just the music didn't really fit the tone or the scene, and it was really took me out of that portion of the episode.
Well, if you remember what it is, maybe we could talk about that later.
It was in the I was watching Bring Back the Night, Take Back the Night with Cardwin. Mm-hmm. And there was something in there. Okay. It was really kind of like like I said, Looney Tunes, Brady Bunch, kind of like goofy score in the background. It was a transitional thing. It wasn't like the whole entire episode, but it was just like one little segment. It's like, I'm kind of like, looking at like a dog with his head tilted.
Okay. Well, with as many TV shows as he's scored, they're not all going to be all winners. There are going to be a couple of miscues, misfires.
Yeah, they can't be. That's definitely for sure. It's not like every comic book page I ever inked was brilliant. I found a few old. A stack of pages of my old stuff, and I was like, how the heck did I ever get a job? Because they were just so bad. No. But it was from like the first year I was working, so.
Everyone's got to start somewhere. So I just wanted to thank everybody for sending us your questions and for participating in this particular poll. One of the fun things about doing this kind of format, and also one of the challenging things about this, is that sometimes podcasts are a little bit on the scripted side, and we are a little bit more prepared in how to respond to some of these answers. But one of the things I wanted to do specifically for this show is kind of answer from the hip. So if you were used to us having all of the answers and us all knowing all of the facts and figures and lore and all of the canon, that doesn't happen all the time when you're pulling stuff straight from memory as we've been doing tonight. So, but I think we did a pretty good job. I think that all the questions were really engaging, and I'd like to do this again later on because it's a nice mental exercise. My head hurts a little bit just because you have to try and pull so much information from so many different sources, and it's a lot of fun doing that kind of exercise. So again, thank you to all of the participants that sent in your questions on the Blood of Kings Facebook page. And again, we are always thankful for all of your involvement and your passion and staying engaged there as our community continues to grow. So as we close the show, Mike, before we get into the roundup of the rest of the show at the Fandom Podcast Network, are there any last thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners?
I like to think of these are a lot of really good, thoughtful questions. So thank you for sending those in. And just, as again, I always like hanging out with you and doing these segments. So it's always a lot of fun. And just bringing up something from the last episode with the card game. I spent way too much money this week buying old cards again. And then once they get here, if Jill finds them, you'll know why I'm no longer responding to your emails.
So she's not allowed to listen to this podcast, or you might have to edit this part out.
Yeah, pretty much.
I know, but that's as Highlander fans, as passionate Highlander fans, sometimes we find those things that mean the most to us. And in this case, even if we never play the card game again, which we definitely will, it's clinging on to those memories and actually kind of like having those flashback moments and really finding those special times that as Highlander fans are they connect us to all the way back to when we saw our first episode or saw our first movie or bought our first soundtrack or bought our first pack of trading cards or first comic. you know, we're all kind of like interlinked that way. So it's a lot of fun. And I think that letting us like have all the listeners share that with us through these questions is also something that's really engaging and fun to do as well. So thank you again for everyone for participating. And remember that Blood of Kings isn't the only show that's on the Fandom Podcast Network. We have a wide variety of shows with a lot of different subjects that we talk about, especially on Culture Class, which is the flagship show on the Fandom Podcast Network. It's a variety show that covers everything from like Godzilla to Star Trek to Star Wars, especially Star Wars right now, since a lot of the of our hosts, especially with Fandom Fulcrum, that's Matt, and with Kevin over there, just coming back or finishing up being at the Orlando celebration. They are hopefully going to come back healthy, because I know that ConCrud has a way of creeping in on people and waylaying people after all that excitement and not getting enough sleep or not nearly enough nutrition. So I hope you guys had a great convention there, and come back to us with grand tales of what happened with saving the Empire or Rebellion, depending on what side you're on. We'll also have Kyle back in a little bit, because right now he is pretty much duck and cover under a bunch of tax forms that he has to get ready for tomorrow. So once you're free from that prison cell, my friend, we are going to get back on track with you at the head of Culture Clash, and look forward to a lot of the episodes that you're crafting right now in your head, keeping those numbers at bay, because I know how creative you are and I know how much you love to theory craft shows. So that's Culture Clash, and Culture Clash will be back on board in a week or so in full form. On Time Warp, we've just finished up the lost television shows of the 1980s, and now we are moving towards our tribute, multi-show tribute of 1987. And that's something that Kevin's going to be helming, and I know that he loves digging deep back into the vaults of the 1980s. And 1986 was our first five-part tribute, and we just had so much fun doing that, and I know that he's really looking forward to doing that again to 1987. Which is coincidentally the 30th anniversary year of 2017, where we're celebrating 30 years of some really great movies like Platoon and Wall Street and The Predator and Lethal Weapon, and RoboCop and Masters of the Universe, and a lot of those really classic movies. So stay tuned for that. We are going to be having those worked on really soon, as soon as we get our team back in full force. And of course, we celebrated a two-part retrospective on the Tron franchise with Couch Potato Theater, hosted by Davis Grayson and his group of renegade programs and conscripts that covered everything in Tron, including the first two movies, the animated series, the video games, and all the fun things that happened in between. So there are a lot of things right now that are going to be happening, and a lot of shows that are going to break loose on the Fandom Podcast Network as soon as we have some of our team come back from traveling and as soon as we have us at full force. But Mike and I are still here. We're still helming the Blood of Kings podcast, and we will be back again next time with another fantastic show. But until then, on behalf of Mike, thanks everyone for listening, and join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings. Mike, that sensation you are feeling is money flying out of your wallet paying for trading cards. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.